Of every plant ever domesticated, rice has fed the most humans. Wheat is a close second, and a long way behind that come maize, potatoes, and the rest. But rice is the staple grain of more than half of the world's people, sustains the densest population centers on the planet, and has done so for roughly 9,000 years. The way different civilizations organized themselves around it, what they taxed, how they measured wealth, where they built their cities, what kind of state they tolerated, is one of the deeper structural stories of human history. Empires built on rice look different from empires built on wheat. The differences are not aesthetic, they are mechanical. Where rice came from, the molecular and archaeological evidence converged in the last 20 years on a single answer. Rice was domesticated in the middle and lower Yangtze River Valley of southern China, beginning around 7,000 to 9,000 BCE. The Shangshan culture site in Zhejiang has yielded rice phytoliths and processing tools dated to roughly 9,000 BCE, the earliest unambiguous evidence of cultivated rice anywhere. The wild ancestor, Oryza rufipogon, still grows in the same region. From this origin, rice spread south and west. By 5,000 BCE, it had reached the Ganges Valley in northern India. An independent secondary domestication of Oryza indica may have happened there. By 3,000 BCE, it was in Korea and the Philippines. Japan's Yayoi period, around 300 BCE, marks the arrival of wet rice cultivation on the Japanese archipelago, an event that effectively created the political and demographic Japan we now recognize. Indonesian, Vietnamese, Thai, and Burmese rice civilizations followed, each adapting wet rice cultivation to their own monsoon geographies. Why wet rice changes a society? The defining feature of paddy rice is that it is grown in water. A paddy is an engineered shallow basin, flooded at planting and drained at harvest, with the water level managed carefully through the growing season. This is not a passive arrangement. A paddy depends on irrigation channels, embankments, and seasonal labor coordination among dozens or hundreds of farmers sharing the same water source. The implications cascade. A village built around wheat can largely mind its own business. Rain falls, wheat grows, harvest happens. A village built around wet rice must coordinate with every other village upstream and downstream. The water schedule is a collective good. Failure to maintain a single embankment can flood 100 neighbors. Disputes over irrigation are existential. Out of this practical necessity grew most of the village-level institutions of monsoon Asia. Water allocation councils, irrigation guilds, the deep social fabric that sociologists later called Gotong Royong in Indonesia, Yui in Japan, and parallel forms across the region. The political-economic implications are larger still. A wet rice paddy, once built, is permanent. The labor invested in terracing a mountain valley in Bali or northern Luzon, generations of work to level the ground, build the walls, dig the channels, is the village's inheritance. A society built on that kind of capital accumulation behaves differently from a society built on annual replanting of open ground. It tends to be more sedentary, more conservative about property, more elaborate about water-related ritual. The Chinese state, by the time of the Han Dynasty, 206 BCE, 220 CE, had organized rice production into a national infrastructure. The Grand Canal, begun under the Sui in the 7th century CE, eventually nearly 1,800 kilometers long, was fundamentally a rice transport system. It moved tax rice from the productive Yangtze South to the political and military north, particularly Beijing once that city became capital. State granaries, the Chongping system, bought rice in surplus years and released it in famines. A bureaucracy of remarkable size existed largely to count, store, ship, and redistribute rice. This is a state shape that emerges from the crop. Wheat-growing northern China developed similar institutions, but on smaller scales. The rice-growing south was where the population and the tax base concentrated. By the late Tang and Song, perhaps two-thirds of the imperial revenue came from rice, and a comparable share of the population lived in the rice belt. The Japanese Koku system, Edo Japan, 1603 to 1868, ran on rice in a more literal way than almost any other historical economy. Feudal lords, the daimyo, were ranked, taxed, and compensated in koku, a measure of rice approximately equal to the amount one adult ate in a year, about 180 liters. A daimyo's domain was officially described by its annual rice yield. Tokugawa shogunate vassals held domains rated at 50,000 koku, 100,000 koku, or in a few cases, over a million. The samurai class was paid in rice stipends. the Edo merchants who eventually controlled the rice futures market, the Dojima Rice Exchange, in Osaka, founded 1697. The first organized futures exchange in the world, became wealthier than many of the lords they nominally served. The implications for Japanese cuisine are enormous. The presence of rice in every meal as the reference point, gohan literally meaning the meal, is a function of 2.5 centuries of an economy where rice was simultaneously food, currency, tax revenue, and cultural identity. Dashi and miso, the side dishes, okazu, the seasonal vegetables, all of them are organized as accompaniments to a bowl of white rice. What rice gave up, what rice did not produce, was a strong tradition of pastoralism, large livestock, or dairy. Wet paddies are bad for grazing animals. Rice-growing regions, broadly, did not develop the cheese and butter cuisines of pastoral Europe and the steppes. They built protein architectures around fish, soybeans, poultry, and small mammals instead. The dashi and miso architecture of Japan, the fermented fish sauces of Southeast Asia, the soy-based cuisines of China and Korea, all of them are protein systems that work without cattle because cattle have no place in a flooded paddy. A crop does not just feed people. It shapes the entire metabolic geography around it. Rice gave Asia incredible population density, intensely social villages, complex states, and food cultures built on grain plus savory liquid pairings. It did so by demanding water, labor, and coordination on a scale that wheat never required. The modern continuity, the Green Revolution of the 1960s and 70s, introduced new high-yield rice varieties. IR8, developed at the International Rice Research Institute in the Philippines, is probably the most consequential single cultivar in human history that dramatically increased the calories per hectare and saved several monsoon belt nations from chronic famine. But the social and political structures that rice built earlier are still legible. Japanese consumption of rice has fallen sharply since 1960. Yet gohan is still the word for meal. Chinese rice politics still drives Grand Canal logistics, just by rail and truck. The Indonesian Gotong Royong mutual aid ethic, the Filipino terraces of Banaue, the Balinese Subak irrigation councils, all of them still operate. A bowl of rice is one of the most ordinary objects in the world. It is also one of the few objects you can hold that has in its history organized more human labor than any other.